Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On a day that we're going to get pounded with snow, we're going to have fun both hours of our program. We'll talk about cars the first hour of our show and movies the second hour of the program. Our guest, Todd Lassa, is with us the first hour. He's currently on the floor of the Chicago Auto Show, and he'll be with us shortly. He's finishing up a press conference where the new updated Toyota Tundra truck is being unveiled. While we get him on the line, we wanted to tell you about some shows that are coming up next week. Monday at 9, our guest for the weekly All Things Political segment will be Susan Page. Susan is Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Following that show at 10, Gavin Newsom will join us, California's current Lieutenant Governor, previously the 42nd Mayor of the lovely city of San Francisco. He'll be sharing his ideas on how government and its citizens can utilize technology to improve their lives and democracy itself. Later in the week, we know that many of you probably heard the news that scientists confirmed that a skeleton found during an archaeological dig in Leicester, central England, last August, is that of the former King Richard III, who was killed at the Battle of Bosworth Field in 1485. Wednesday at 9, put it on your calendars, we'll be joined by three members from the University of Leicester who aided in that research. That should be very interesting. Cars, the first hour of the program today, we'll be looking at the best of 2013, the worst of 2013, the most interesting, the most fuel efficient. We'll be talking about leasing, how long people hold on to their cars, how long you can hold on to your car, and much more. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Todd. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Lassa is joining us now from the Chicago Auto Show, which actually kicks off this week, and we'll be talking with him about cars. He's a writer for Automobile Magazine. He's also worked for Motor Trend, where he wrote news and rumors about future cars and blogged as the Motor City Blogman. He's also written for the Milwaukee Sentinel, the Quad City Times, the San Diego Business Journal, and Inside the Beltway newsletter, and Auto Week. And he says, without autonomous cars on the near horizon, we face the greatest threat to our enthusiasm since the malaise and oil embargoes of the 1970s, the era in which he earned his driver's license. So we'll take care of that enthusiasm this hour. Chicago Auto Show is going to be opening soon, and it draws a huge attendance. We'll talk about that. And cars this hour, I can't believe how much you like to talk about cars. Our phone lines are almost filled. Hello, Todd. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on the air. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, great pleasure. We're going to have a lot of fun this hour. So the Chicago Auto Show is opening pretty soon, huh?
It's opening to the public, I believe on Saturday, but we've got press days today and tomorrow.
So you just saw the unveiling of a Toyota truck, I believe. How do they unveil a car for you? Is it under some kind of big bow and packaging or what?
Oh, yeah. They like to be very very Hollywood or Broadway about it. big flashing lights and, drive the car out onto the stage. In this case, Toyota has used the Chicago Auto Show quite often the last 10, 15, 20 years to show new trucks. And they have a separate ballroom where they show it. And then later in the day, they'll move it up to the Toyota stand.
Do you get to ride around in it?
Not yet, no. That won't be until a little bit later. Usually at the shows like this and like Detroit which is a big show in the U.S., and that was last month. They show a lot of new cars, production versions, as well as concepts, and usually we don't get to drive them until, at the very least, a few weeks after the show, often several months after the show. There are a few exceptions. Sometimes, for example, at the Geneva show, I'll be driving a car ahead of time, a new Mercedes, before the show. So there are a few exceptions, but it's generally they're just showing off the cars, letting the public know what the car or truck looks like. And trying to build enthusiasm for it, obviously.
Right. You wrote an interesting piece expecting, and I guess all of us in the back of our minds expect the Chinese to get into the car market because they're in so many different markets. But you say that the cars still look as viable in this market as Chinese milk.
Yeah, I think so. You know, if you're talking about cars that are Chinese, indigenous to China, that is designed and built for China with thought of bringing them here in the same way that the Korean automakers kind of invaded the U.S. market 20 years ago and that the Japanese invaded maybe 40 years ago now. You know, if you're talking about those sorts of cars, it'll be a long time before we see something like that. Now, that said, there are also partnerships between Chinese manufacturers and Western or Japanese or Korean automakers. And, you know, it's very likely that we'll see at some, well, I shouldn't say likely, it's possible we'll see a Chinese built car on the market here in the near future, but it'll be something that'll be familiar. For example, a Chinese company, Geely, owns Volvo, so if they start building some Volvos in China, then I guess you'd have a Chinese built Volvo here, but it won't be the types of cars they're designing themselves are not necessarily going to make it here anytime soon.
You would think that they would be working fast and furiously to build clean cars, considering the air quality in China. Are they?
Well, you would think that, and in general, they are. They do tend to do some clean stuff. There is another exception I need to state to my column, and I still stand by it. But there's a company called Koda that's selling electric cars here, but in incredibly small numbers, and I think only in California at this point. And the cars, the designs are not very up to date, and neither is the technology. But yes, they've got the possibility to do that kind of infrastructure there. You know, hydrogen power, for example, hydrogen fuel cells, because they don't have the kind of status quo infrastructure that we and Western Europe and the rest of Asia have had for a long, long time. They can kind of start from scratch. They also have taxation in China on engine displacement. So the cars tend to have smaller engines there than they do here.
I see. So of all the cars you've seen this year, Todd, and I'm sure there are many of them, put them in various categories if you'd like. What really strikes your fancy?
Well, the big news this year, coming from the Detroit show, is the new C7 Corvette. That's the 2014 model of the Chevrolet Corvette. And they're bringing back the Stingray name. And for, you know, growing up in Milwaukee, the suburbs of Milwaukee in the mid to late 60s and watching reruns of Route 66. you know, when American cars were very much led the way here before there was much of a foreign invasion, the Chevrolet Corvette is kind of a small kid's American dream. And the new Corvette, I think, fits that. It's a good advance over what they've done before. It's going to have at least 450 horsepower in its base trim. It'll be very fast, but it's also going to have cylinder shutoff, which means that at highway cruising speeds, it'll shut down from a V8 to a four-cylinder engine. And they're saying that it'll have better than 26 miles per gallon highway fuel economy. And it's a really sharp car. It's going to be fun to drive. And, you know, it's the star so far this year.
How many people buy Corvettes?
You know, it's not much. In the heyday back in the 60s and 70s, they sometimes sold close to 40,000. Nowadays, it's more like, I think last year they sold 12 or 14,000. But, you know, they outsold Mazda Miata, for example. It's what we call a halo car. So it builds equity in the brand. It builds enthusiasm for the brand. So you might not be able to afford a Corvette, or you might not be able to spend that kind of money on a car that has no back seat. But you, but Chevrolet would like you to think that if you buy one of its Chevy Cruzes or a Malibu or something like that, that you're getting a little bit of Corvette in there, or at least you know you can connect with. The company that brings you Corvettes.
Mm-hmm. What about people like me who are looking for great gas mileage, cars that will last for years and years and years?
Well, cars do last a lot longer these days. And in fact, one reason why the auto market has been picking up only slowly is that people have been keeping their cars for 10, 11 years. The average age of a car on the road, I think, is something like 11 years old now, which would have been quite old 20 or 30
yes.
or 40 years ago.
Yes.
So the reliability is getting a lot better across the board, whether it's an Asian or a domestic or a European model. If you want something with good fuel efficiency, I guess I'd have to ask, it depends on what kind of driving you do. If you do a lot of city driving, if you're talking about a car for commuting, a hybrid or even an extended range hybrid like the Chevrolet Volt, plug-in hybrid like the Toyota Prius or the new Ford C-Max Energy, quite a nice kind of little minivan, would be good for around town. If you do more long distance driving, if you have a longer drive to work on freeway, if you do a lot of kind of weekend travel or longer travel in the car. Diesels are starting to emerge in this market a little bit, and in fact, at this show at Chicago here, the Chevrolet is going to show a diesel version of its compact Cruze that will get at least 42 miles per gallon on the highway.
Oh,
yeah,
my. Hmm.
And that car is going to cost about $26,000, and you know it's got a 2-liter four cylinder. Turbo diesel, and I haven't driven it yet, but it's supposed to be a pretty decent engine.
What about the, it seems to still be a big market, although it escapes me because gasoline prices are very high right now, but I guess we used to call them SUVs, and now we're calling them, what, crossover vehicles? There still seems to be a huge market
crossovers.
For that.
Yeah, crossovers. Well, the reason we call them crossovers now is that, you know, 10 years ago, most sport utility vehicles were based on truck chassis. They were body on frame. That made them cheaper to make because a body on frame construction is a lot cheaper than a unibody. And they also were very big and trucky. I should say most of them were. There were some exceptions all along, like the Toyota RAV4, the Honda CR-V, the Ford Escape. But now, since the 2008, since the Great Recession and since fuel prices have gone up and down and back up again, people are shifting to these car-based sport utilities. So they would tend to be front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive instead of rear-wheel drive or four-wheel drive. They're much more fuel efficient. They're still not as fuel efficient as a car generally. But if you need the cargo space or if you need a bigger crossover with you know, for seven passengers, for example, you can find quite a few in the market that will run pretty well with a four-cylinder or a V6 engine, whereas those old truck-based sport utilities tended to have V8 engines.
Todd Lasse is our guest. He is previewing the cars of the Chicago Auto Show, which opens in just a couple days. He's executive editor of Automobile, and we're talking about the good, the bad, the fuel efficient, the ugly, the what's worth your while and what isn't, cars of 2013, and other cars as well. Our phone number, one line open if you'd like to take it, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, will be with you in a moment on the Ideas Network. As I told you, we are having fun today. Hour two of our program, the movies that you really should see before the Oscars. Let's go to phone calls for Todd. We start with Russ in Wausau. Hi, Russ.
Hi. All my life I've driven the same type of vehicle. A small pickup with a four-cylinder engine and four-wheel drive and a regular cab. When I went to replace my current Toyota truck, I discovered that nobody makes them anymore. The Ford Ranger, the Chevy S10, the little Nissan truck, the smaller Toyota truck, all of them are gone and have been turned into mid-sized trucks, more the size of like a Dodge Dakota. I'm just wondering from your guest, is there any hope in the future for the truck I'm looking for?
Well, Kathleen, if I could answer this way, it's not looking very good for our listener. The fact is, pickup trucks, as I mentioned, being body on frame, are fairly cheap to produce. So it doesn't cost GM or Ford or Toyota or Chrysler much more to make a full-size pickup than it does to make a mid-size pickup than a compact pickup. And they found that customers mostly want those big full-size pickups with V8 engines, or in the case of the Ford F-150, you can get it with a turbocharged V6 called the EcoBoost engine. General Motors is going to do a next generation of its midsize pickup coming up late this year, actually. The Chevrolet Colorado and the GMC Canyon will still be available. Ford dropped the Ranger from its lineup because Ford figures it can get decent fuel mileage out of full-size pickup, give more people what they want. They sell more F-Series trucks than anybody else sells cars or trucks in the United States every year. So I'm afraid that's kind of where the market has been heading for a long time and will continue to head. That said, I mean, Toyota and Nissan will do these larger, I guess they're not compact pickups anymore, you're right, but they'll continue to do the midsize pickups, some of them available with four-cylinder engines.
Thanks, Russ, for your call. Mark in Wausau. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Nissan has recently redesigned their Altima in a four-cylinder. I'm wondering if your guests could compare the Altima four-cylinder to the Toyota Camry four-cylinder and to the Honda Accord. Does one have a great edge over the next? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd have to say that the edge would have to go to the Honda Accord in this case. The four-cylinder, both the Honda Accord and the Nissan Altima have continuously variable automatic transmissions. That is, they're not traditional step gear kind of transmission. And those transmissions are very efficient, but they're not easy to like in terms of driving. But Honda has done a pretty good job of refining its CVT transmission to go with that four-cylinder engine. And on top of it, the Honda Accord, the last Honda Accord was a disappointment. The new one, which came out this year, 2013 model year, same time as the Nissan Altima, was just a better done car. It's got a nice kind of little belt line, very easy to see outside, to look out from the car, very good visibility, and a lot of nice features, and for, you know, a decent price. The Toyota Camry is always a pretty solid, refined kind of car in its category, but it's getting a little bit old in terms of its interior design, and just in general, they need to renew that car pretty soon.
Todd, what about the Honda Civic? Always has been a bestseller, didn't do very well last year, and it was to be redesigned this year.
Yeah, and they did do a rush, what they call a refresh of the existing Honda Civic. And again, this gets back to the whole thing: unibody versus body on frame. The unibodies are there's only so much you can do to kind of redesign them on short notice without redoing the whole car, which you can't do more than once every 4 or 5 years. So they did this rush refresh on the car that came out only a year earlier. And it's better, but it's still kind of a disappointment for Honda, especially where the previous Honda Civic was. The thing is, they've got a new president, a man named Ito, and he took over, I think, just in time to have some effect on the Honda Accord. But as I say, there was only so much they could do with the Civic. The Civic is competent. It's okay, but they took a lot of money out of the interior, so it feels a little bit cheaper compared with the previous Civic, which is a disappointment.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark, for your call. Rick in Bellevue. Hi.
Good morning. Great topic. I have just a couple of questions. One, do you feel that car enthusiasts tend to stay away from the foreign automakers, specifically the Japanese? I mean, BMW and Mercedes-Benz are pretty popular with enthusiasts, but people that buy the Japanese cars tend to view them as appliances as opposed to be enthusiasts. And do you believe that the quality difference between the Japanese cars and the American cars is either closing or has closed at this point? I'll listen off the air. Great show. Take care.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks. Well, two very good questions. The last one, I'll start with the last one and say that, yes, I think the gap is closing. There's still, I think, some work to be done among the domestics, but I think they've managed to close the gap for the most part. Certainly the reliability is probably as good. Maybe some of the fit and finish is not quite up to the Japanese standards yet, but on certain models, they are getting there. Ford's had its ups and downs. It was very much closing in on the Japanese. And then the sync and the MyFord touch systems just got were heavily criticized by the buyers. Just didn't like the way it worked, and its quality numbers came down. Now, on the first question, I'd have to disagree. I mean, I can name a bunch of cars that enthusiasts really like. I can tell you that my colleagues and myself, among us, we probably have more Mazda Miatas than anybody else, just because they're fun and affordable, and you know, it's a lot of fun to drive. My wife drives one to work every day. There's the Nissan GTR, which, frankly, for me, is a little bit of it drives a little bit too much like a video game. It's very high tech. It doesn't quite have the same feel I get out of, say, a Porsche, a Boxster, or a Cayman. But it's also a very good enthusiast car. Enthusiasts love it. There's a new Acura NSX coming out within the next couple of years that looks like it's going to be a lot of fun to drive as well. So the Japanese do a lot of good, fun cars, and especially in the low price range, cars like the Miata and even some of the smaller, less expensive cars than that.
Talking about cars that are fun to drive, tell me, what is the state of cars that drive themselves? I can't imagine that that's going to really take off, because I'm with you. I like to drive my car. It's fun. It's fun to drive a car. Are we going to be seeing those pretty soon in mass?
There's already the technology to get us pretty close. You have what they call active cruise control, which means you set your cruise control, say, on the freeway for, oh, say 65, I think is the speed limit in Wisconsin. So there's sensors that detect the distance between LIDAR and radar and so on, cameras in the car that detect the distance between you and the car in front of you. And when the car in front of you starts to slow down or brake, your car will automatically do that with the active cruise control. It'll even come to a complete stop in some cases. That's already available. You have lane departure control, where the car will try to steer you back in the lane if it thinks if you start to wander from the lane without using your turn signal, for example. That stuff, all you have to do is amp that up a little bit, and there are companies working on this. And the reason they're working on this is they feel, well, ostensibly the reason is for safety. You know, it makes driving safer, they say. And the goal is to have no highway fatalities, you know, by the 2020s, depending on who you talk to. The other side of that, and Google is a company that's also working on autonomous cars, and their reason for doing that, obviously, is that if you're sitting behind your wheel and you don't have to pay attention, you can be on your mobile device, on your smartphone or your tablet,
Googling away,
you know, buying stuff and going from page to page and making phone calls and then using all that equipment. I don't like it either, Kathleen, but it's inevitable. It's coming.
You have to put your complete faith in technology, don't you? It could make a mistake.
You do. You do. But if you think about it, it's something that automakers have been talking about actually since about 1940. I think General Motors at the 39 New York World's Fair had a display of, you know, there was nothing to it in terms of technology, but just said, cars of the future will drive themselves. And how long have we had autopilot airliners? I mean, it's kind of the same idea. Again, I don't like it either. I prefer a car that doesn't have quite so much things going on in the dashboard. I'd rather just go out and drive and find a twisty road and have fun. but you know, I'm becoming more and more rare among drivers on that subject.
Charles in Wisconsin Rapids, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Hey, I wonder if your guest could comment on the difference in handling characteristics between a front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, and four-wheel drive. And the question comes from, I used to drive a Jeep, now I'm driving a Subaru, so I've gone from four-wheel drive to all-wheel drive. And so I guess I'm just interested in your guest perspective. We'll take an answer off the air.
What do you think of the Subaru? I just got one, too, that all-wheel drive. It's the first time I've had it. Do you like it? Yeah, I like it. Do you like it, Charles?
I do. I like mine.
Yeah, I like mine, too. Well, we love ours, really. I mean, that's part of the whole thing, right? You've got to love your car. No, I like the all-wheel drive. I don't know if it's in my head that I've heard that it's supposed to be better on the road, but I've believed it. I believe that it hugs the road better. It feels more solid to me for some reason.
Yeah, well, it will help you, say, get up a snowy hill or, you know, if you do a little light off-roading or any kind of, even a dirt road or something, it'll get you around there a little bit better. What's more important, really, with the all-wheel drive, especially in winter and especially in a place like Wisconsin, is the tire choice. So you really, you can get by on a Subaru all-wheel drive with, say, all-season tires if you live in a rural section of Wisconsin where maybe they don't plow quite so often. You probably want to get some winter tires, and even though it'll cost you maybe $1,000 to get a set of winter tires with separate wheels so that you don't have to have them mounted every season. And this is what Donna and I do with our Miata. We put winter tires on every year from November to roughly March in Michigan, and gets us around the Metro Detroit area quite well. But that makes a big difference. Now, in terms of front drive versus rear drive versus all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive handling, it depends a lot on the car. Obviously, a sports car that has a lower center of gravity, closer to the ground, and has a chassis designed for handling first is going to be best. And we tend to prefer rear-wheel drive cars the most in that case, because all-wheel drive adds a little bit of weight, although all-wheel drive can give you excellent handling. In, say, a sports sedan, something like an Audi S6 or S7 or S4. There are a lot of variables. But in general, for handling, I'd say rear-wheel drive has its advantages. Some front-wheel drive cars can be designed to be good handlers. The Mini Cooper comes to mind. The old Honda CRX was very good as a front-wheel drive car. So I guess that's why we hope people read Automobile Magazine because,
right.
We write about which ones have better handling. So,
right.
And what you consider better handling depends on how you drive, too, whether you're talking about driving like a weekend racer or whether you're talking about, being able to get to work in snowy conditions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Charles, for your call. Candy in Harvard, Illinois. Hi.
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 So I am a domestic coordinator, and I have been driving my beautiful Mazda 66 for the last 11 years, and my son is about to turn 7 and get his first car, which is my beautiful Mazda 66, and I have been looking at the Mazda V for the last year or so, and I was just wondering what your opinion was on going from a 66 to a Mazda V, considering that I, domestic coordinator, having to back at, hatch room and being able to load things into it and whatnot.
And describe it for us, Todd. What's a Mazda V?
The Mazda V? Are you talking about the Mazda 5?
The Prius V.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm sorry.
That did confuse me, yes. The Prius V, yeah, that's the a little bit bigger. It's like a regular Prius hybrid, but it has a kind of a almost a station wagon or small sport. No, I wouldn't call it sport utility, but small MPV body. So it's got a lot of cargo capacity. You know, I'd say you're probably going to find that it'll suit your needs. It'll have the capacity you need and everything, and of course, hybrid, better fuel mileage, especially in the city. Remember, again, that's where city fuel mileage works better for hybrids than highway fuel mileage. But I'd also take a look at the Ford C-Max, which actually has similar powertrains to the Prius V. But I think Ford actually, I think it's more refined than the Toyota. The interior is a little bit nicer. The ride and the quietness are nicer than the Toyota.
Let's talk about when the price of hybrids may be coming down. People ask the question, they want to buy hybrids, but they're a bit more, in some cases, quite a bit more expensive than non-hybrids that may get good gas mileage, but not terrific gas mileage. And so they forsake the hybrid.
Well, I think if you look at the Toyota Prius lineup, they do have a model called the Prius C. That's a little bit of a smaller car, and that starts somewhere around $20,000. So, I don't think they're necessarily that expensive if you're talking about the traditional hybrid. Now, the technology is advancing with these plug-in hybrids, where you can drive further on pure battery than you would with a standard hybrid. Or you look at something like, if you look at some of the electric vehicles like the Nissan Leaf, Ford has an electric version of its Focus. And then you have something like the Chevrolet Bolt. And there's a new Cadillac ELR coming out that has the same powertrain as the Chevrolet Bolt. Now that, the Volt currently starts at $41,000 or $42,000, less than $7,500 federal tax credit. But it's just like anything else. It's just like when a new style of TV comes out, when 3D or when HD TV came out, and you couldn't touch one for $10,000 at first. Eventually, as production, as manufacturing catches up, the cost comes down. The thing is, not that many. There hasn't been great demand yet for the Chevrolet Volt, so there's not the kind of numbers to bring the production costs down too quickly. That said, General Motors is working on it and trying to bring the costs down anyway. And then you have diesels, which I mentioned, which again would be better for you if you're doing mostly highway driving, for better fuel mileage. That's where you get the advantage. But, to clean up a diesel, to make a diesel engine clean and meet emission standards now costs the car manufacturer just about as much as it costs to do a hybrid powertrain.
Really?
So,
ooh.
So when you see something like the Chevy Cruze diesel coming out at $26,000, or the VW Passat diesel you can have for about $30,000 or so, those are actually, that's probably where you're going to see those prices for a little while. Car prices are going up in general anyway, so you have to pay a little bit more, at least at this point.
Thanks, Candy, so much for the call. Mark in Richland Center, hi.
This hybrid Synergy drive that you're talking about in the Prius, I'm on my second Prius, but I don't use it as a car. I use it as a truck, because you can't get a truck that gets 40 miles to the gallon. And the torque capabilities of that drive system are such that you can load the heck out of it and still take off. Now, you would think that if Ford, well, I'm thinking that Toyota, at least one of the people at the dealership said that they thought that Toyota was going to come out with their own trucks with that same power system because of the torque capabilities under load. I mean, that's what locomotive trains take off with, is electric power. And then you could actually have a truck that gets 40 miles to the gallon. I know that there are a lot of craftsmen in small businesses, carpenters, painters, plumbers, that kind of thing, that are using these Priuses with the hatchback to use as a company truck, because you can't get a pickup truck to get that kind of mileage. So what do you think about, are the car companies going to put this power system in that kind of a vehicle, like the F-150?
Well, Toyota has said that it would have hybrid power available in virtually every car platform it does by 2020. They haven't really specifically talked about trucks. General Motors tried a hybrid version of its Silverado and its Sierra, and the best they could get for fuel economy was about 20 or 21 mpg city, and then about 20 mpg highway. So again, that better city number, because again, where you really see the advantage is when you're driving around town and the engine shuts off at stoplights, or you can drive short periods of time just on electric power. Frankly, I think if you're using your Prius as kind of a truck, you're taking advantage of the fact that it's a hatchback, and it's actually a rather large hatchback at that, so you've got a lot of capacity there. frankly, other than Priuses and Mini Coopers, Americans don't like hatchbacks all that much. Trucks, I think we're probably going to see more diesel before we see more hybrid power in the trucks in the near future.
Thanks very much, Mark, for the call. We're talking about cars this hour of the program. Todd Lassa is our guest, executive editor of Automobile. He is joining us from Chicago, where there is a preview now for press people who write about cars for the Chicago Auto Show, which begins this week. Todd has done a lot of writing for cars. He also worked for Motor Trend magazine, where he wrote news and rumors about future cars. He blogged as the Motor City Blogman. He's from the Milwaukee area and wrote for the Milwaukee Sentinel some time ago. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Care to send an email? talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, it's a couple weeks before the Academy Awards. I've never done this. I think I'll do this over the weekend, come to think of it. The 25 movies that you should see before the Academy Awards. A lot of people just take the weekend and go from movie to movie to movie to see everything so that they can root for their favorite film. I, of course, already know my favorite film. You can imagine what it is. But we'll be talking about those films and hearing clips from some of the films. We'll have a good time. So movies of the year and those worthy of awards, hour two of our show. Back to phone calls. Judy in Beloit. Hello, Judy.
Yes, thank you. I'm interested in a hybrid, and I'm intrigued by the Ford C-Max hybrid. And I read somewhere where there was a sliding door, like a minivan. And I just think that would be perfect for me, and I just can't seem to find it. Do they not make it anymore, or is it just for Europe?
Well, they make the C-Max, but it does not, and they sell that in the United States, but it does not have a sliding door. I can't remember. There may be a version, and I think it might actually be the B-Max, which is an even smaller, what they call an MPV, multi-purpose vehicle, sold in Europe that they're not selling here. That one might have a sliding door, but I don't frankly remember. I can tell you that the C-Max sold in the United States has four conventional doors, and it's a little mini minivan looking vehicle. So it's got a flip up tailgate like a hatchback would, and it's actually quite versatile, I think. But no sliding doors.
Oh, I'd love to have a sliding door like a little minivan. Well, thank you for your answer.
Thank you, Judy, for the call. Some emails have been coming in. Could you please, Todd, speak about the future and market of electric vehicles, given that the Tesla Model S was named Motor Trend's 2013 Vehicle of the Year?
Yeah, and it was also named the Automobile Magazine Automobile of the Year. It's quite a good car, but it's to get the full 300-mile range, you have to spend about $100,000 to get the upmarket model. I think electric vehicles are still going to be a small minority part of the minor segment among automakers in the years to come, at least through, say, 2020, 2025. The costs are starting to come down. The technology is starting to get better. It's a little bit ironic that the type of battery that they generally use, the lithium-ion battery, are the same kinds of batteries that are giving Boeing some problems with 787. So, there are always, engineering trade-offs. But there have been no, so far the cars with lithium-ion batteries have had no real problems like that, of course. But the other thing that's going on is that automakers are really, really making great improvements in the efficiency of the good old-fashioned internal combustion engine, gasoline or diesel, but even gasoline with gas direct injection and cylinder cutoff. And with turbocharging, for example, you can put a smaller engine in a big car than you would have put in the car a few years ago. The horsepower that some of the four cylinders are making now is you know, not far off from what V8s were making 20 or 30 years ago. So you're seeing a lot of improvements there, and I think the majority of the market for at least the next 10 years will be gas internal combustion engines. I think diesels will probably gain a little more popularity in the United States. They're huge in Europe. And electrics and hybrids and plug-in hybrids and extended range engines, I think will improve, but I think it's still going to be a fairly small 5 or 10% part of the market anytime soon.
Jeff and Nina, hi.
Hi. As we know, the trolley system is run by air in Europe. Now, what do you think about the new air cars coming out in California? And also, didn't China come up with a $2,000 car? It was like a BIC, a throwaway car?
Well, first of all, I don't know. I don't think trolleys are run by air in Europe. And, you know, there's been experimentation by a small high-tech company with an engine that runs on air. But to me, that just sounds like perpetual motion, which, you know, is just, which is a fantasy, unfortunately. But I think the car you might be talking about is actually from India, called the Tata Nano. And that car was about $2,500. It turns out that the Indians did not want to trade up from motorcycles to those cars quite so much. It's not selling all that well. And what people in these emerging markets want, as much as Americans or Western Europeans, are nicer, bigger cars. And so, you know, it's all about, you know, kind of getting those income levels up, better standard of living. And once they do, they'll probably be buying cars similar to what we buy. Interestingly, Tata also is a huge Indian conglomerate run by the Tata family, and it bought Jaguar and Land Rover a little while back, and it's doing pretty well with Land Rover especially. Sales are up over there over the last year or so.
Thanks, Jeff, for the call. Bruce in Wausau, hi.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Kathleen. You have an excellent program.
Thank you.
Yes, I'd like to ask Todd a couple of questions here. I've been flying radio-controlled aircraft for years, and a lot of people would look at this as just a toy, but the type of toys I'm flying are very expensive and very exotic toys. And the thing there that I was going to ask you is that when we build these airframes, we use composite materials like carbon graphite and Kevlar. And what we'll do is we'll take every component to that airframe and weigh it and make sure that we have the lightest, strongest component in there. And as far as the electric aircraft that I fly, that is done with the lithium-ion batteries or the lithium nanophosphate batteries. And so far, we found that they're quite safe. And I was wondering, you know, like in the future, do you think, Todd, that they'll ever be using these type of products, like, say, for the bodies of these cars and also in the construction of the engines? Like, some of these polymer engines that I've seen tested are quite impressive.
Well, I think, you know, the materials that automakers are working with now, besides high-strength steel, which is kind of the more common, moderately priced material. You're seeing more and more aluminum. An all-aluminum Range Rover, for example, just debuted, and it took 700 pounds out of the Range Rover. But they're also working with carbon fiber and trying to get the costs of using more and more carbon fiber material in cars down. Now, you know, they've been building Formula One cars out of carbon fiber, the bodies, for quite some time. And this new Corvette I spoke about has a carbon fiber roof, for example. But that's still relatively expensive, and, you know, their automakers are worried about the margins as much as anybody else. So it's just like the electrification or the extended range electrics. It's going to take a little bit of time to bring the costs down, and it'll take more manufacturing to bring those down. So, yeah, we'll see more and more of that, but it won't happen very quickly. It'll take some time.
Thanks very much for the call. An email has come in from Jim. With all the technological advancements in the pipe for new cars, how is anyone going to be able to afford them? A Super Bowl ad for Dodge trucks showed a variety of farmers and noted that Dodge is the farmer in all of us. I'm a farmer, and most farmers can't afford the $40,000 to $50,000 price for a new truck. Henry Ford knew he had to price his cars so that his workers could afford to buy them. What's the answer, Todd, to this dilemma?
Well, that's a great question, Kathleen. The trucks, I mentioned that the new Toyota Tundra is launching here, and Toyota is with this truck concentrating on the higher trim levels. They've got one called the 1794. That's kind of a competitor for the Ford F-150 King Ranch. And those are sold to, I guess, well-off ranchers as well as suburban cowboys who'd rather have a pickup truck than a car. And they come quite loaded. But these trucks, mostly, there's a lot of variability in the way you can have them built in terms of the powertrains, in terms of how nice the interiors are, what kind of options you get. And as I mentioned earlier, body-on-frame pickup trucks are still relatively cheap to build. So if you need a truck, I think you could probably still get a decent one from, you know, maybe $25,000, which, you know, is not cheap, but it's not expensive anymore in terms of vehicle price. I think to a certain extent, getting back to kind of the Henry Ford comment that, you know, might be getting away from cars as a commodity anymore, maybe kind of turning into a luxury item again. People want all of the they want nice interiors, and they want all the latest what they call infotainment. I hate that word, but the infotainment, you know, having your having Pandora and AHA radio and connectivity in your car. And you know, so I think you know, it cars are kind of becoming a luxury item again. It's to buy a brand new one.
Well, and the other thing,
buying off these used ones.
Right, referring to what you were saying earlier, we're holding on to our cars for so long, maybe we see it now as a bigger deal, which makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. But certainly when you go into the dealer and you want a new car and you see all these, you know, all this technology that was nowhere to be found when you bought your car 8 or 10 or 11 years ago. Now you're talking about cameras that help you back up. You're talking about lights that they've got systems, blind spot warning systems where it tells you whether a car is in your blind spot or not, the little light that goes on the inside of your side view mirror. All kinds of things that, you know, lots of cameras in cars now. Some
right.
cars have multiple cameras, and that does cost money, but people want that.
Yeah.
That appears to be what they're buying.
Just give me a good ride that gets good gas mileage. I'm a happy woman, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. I should say, too, one thing I forgot to mention, the gentleman, the caller who mentioned, asked whether I thought Japanese cars had any kind of flavor, were fun to drive or not. You know, getting back to the Chicago Auto Show, of course, we see the new Toyota Tundra here. We see that Chevy Cruze diesel I mentioned. There's also Nissan is showing a Juke Nismo, which I know that sounds like a very strange name, but it's a Nismo is Nissan's kind of tuner performance division, and here at the Chicago show, they're going to try to make the point that they're going to try to do more with Nismo, which is well known in Japan, and do more with that here in the United States. So there's a lot going on at the Chicago show worth going down for.
Oh, I'm sure. Emma, we don't have much time, Emma, but can you do it quickly? LaCrosse, hi.
Hello there. I was hoping that Todd could answer a question. He sounds like an amalgamation of my fiancé and I. I think about autos more as a business CEO political idea, and my fiancé thinks of them more as the chassis and the center of gravity battery. Anyway, we're trying to find a compromise for a vehicle, and we're thinking of a Ranger, but we have a child. So does a Ranger have space for one in the back? And if so, is there one that's economical?
Okay, we have a very short period of time. Quickly, Todd.
You're talking about the Ford Ranger? I'm afraid they don't make that anymore, or they don't sell it anymore in the United States. They make it for other markets. You're probably going to have to look at a Toyota Tacoma or a Nissan Frontier. And, yes, you can get the four-door, the crew cab body styles in either of those trucks and have room for the kid in the back seat if he needs to.
Todd, thank you so much. Please join us again. We had so much fun.
Kathleen, I always have fun talking to you about cars. I think it was a couple of years ago, just after the last time the Packers won the Super Bowl, and I'm hoping it won't be that long again.
It won't
before they speak.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Todd Lassa, executive editor of Automobile. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning, who produced the show, Katie Mattson for on-air production.